Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Salad or Dolly, threw a great party. We all drank Bacardi, it got kinda gnarly. We're light as a feather, we're tougher than leather. Together we're weirder, we're weirder together.
Opa.
Opa, I like that. Expressing your Greek roots. You got in touch with your Patois roots and your Scottish roots on the last episode, and now you're delving into your Mediterranean heritage.
Just my name is Greek.
It is, isn't it? Ione. What was she known for?
She was a demigod who Zeus liked and...
Zeus liked everyone. I know. That is not that prestigious
and
a claim.
And so Hera turned her into a cow and put her on an island, but she was like this beautiful cow. So Zeus turned himself into a bull so he could...
F her.
And... yeah, and there's some sort of violet-colored stone. Like, you know, Violet, my niece.
Yes.
Ione, or Iona, Ione, I think, and Violet also cross over, meaning violet-colored stone. Or there's some crossover with the names, which I love. I love
mythological family.
We are.
Rooted in appreciation of the stars, astrology, the ancient narratives.
Yeah, the runes. But runes are just... They're not really, well, runes are just, they're not, I mean, you throw the runes.
What are they?
I don't know.
They're literally little stick figures.
My father loved reading the runes.
Yeah.
I love a tarot card.
Yeah. You don't read the runes much yourself. We knew someone who had tattoos of runes. Was it Emil Corrin Wilson or someone had runes on them?
Emil Corrin?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Maybe.
Yeah.
Stick and poke.
Before we get too deep into this episode, I'm experimenting with plugging upcoming shows at the beginning.
What's that? Front loading?
It's a pivot. I'm front loading the boring stuff. So there is the next Weirder Together variety show on April 18th at the Great Club. I'm playing a gig May 3rd in Nunawading, Victoria at the Round. Sunday, May 5th, we are both doing the Not On Your Rider thing as part of the Sydney Comedy Festival. And then also today we're announcing, when is this? This is 1st of June. I'm going to be doing one of those Small Fry Rock concerts in Brisbane at the Trifford. And it's me and Katie Still, who is in Little Birdie. So there's some announcements for you. And there's going to be another announcement kind of this week about potentially taking the Weirder Together variety show Melbourne way.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
I love it. I think I can't wait to see the Melbourne talent.
Are you ready to expand your sense of possibilities in Melbourne beyond the Docklands apartments?
yeah, the last time. Well, the very last time I treated myself as Retta from, what's the show, Parks and Rec.
Hmm.
They said, treat yourself. And I stayed in a fancy hotel. And I was so happy.
That's right. You were like Park Hyatt or something. Yeah.
Something. And I got like a suite with a wraparound balcony.
But lest people think that was, I mean, that was an anomaly. You had a very interesting experience because you were filming. We came to Australia for 2021
mm-hmm.
and you booked a gig on this TV show, La Brea.
Yes.
Which is set 10 minutes from our house in LA.
Yeah.
It was shooting in Melbourne.
And it was as like if the universe,
the height of quarantine.
I know, the universe is like, you're going to move and do a job in Australia, but you're not going to miss home because you'll be filming in a fake Hollywood.
Yeah.
And they did it very well, I have to say. But they put us up in the Docklands, which anyone I told were like, ooh.
In the dead of winter.
Too. In the dead of a lockdown.
Yeah.
I mean, Melbourne had a very serious lockdown, but I had a good time. I tell the story that I walked across the street and there was a Asian market and I just got some goodies and ordered the best food.
But remember that whole period? Because there were those, what they called snap lockdowns between the states.
Yeah.
And it was like, if there was like a random case of COVID, just the borders would slam shut. So I remember every time you left, it was like a soldier going off to war. I was like, oh my God, I might not see you again.
I'm not a diva, but I started getting insane. Like, remember when I was getting like fussy about the dumbest things because I think I was so scared of being locked down.
No, but they weren't stupid. They were things like you didn't want to go 3 days early for a costume fitting. You were trying to minimize the time you were crossing state lines.
I was just thinking today they got me a facial and because it was such a like big budget American TV show. And so before my shoot, I had this facial and I was just thinking I should get a facial. Mm. Anyway, but yeah, it was so... It was a real network show where they like, my character was a lawyer. So my clothes were like beige sweater, gray skirt, pumps this high, pumps maybe that high, hair a little bit curled, hair a little less curled. So they would fly me to Melbourne for one costume change look to run it back by American executives.
Yeah, everything for those type of shows, everything goes past the
And it was all these choices that were so minimal. And the costume designer was just like, oh my God, I'm sorry, your character is the boring clothes. But I didn't care. But I was like, can we just stack a couple fittings in one trip? Because I'm not locking down for 2 weeks for one costume look.
And then when the lockdown got more serious, they wanted you to relocate. Or you and Goldie to relocate, I mean, but not me. It just sounded crazy. That was the first time you asked to be written off.
Yeah, I got written off the show. I mean, look, it was a good show, and if I had a sort of bigger part, and I would relocate to Melbourne for a TV show. It was just a specific. We were kind of like move back to LA. I can't remember why. I think it was just like I had one scene every third episode.
Yeah.
And it was just, I don't know, why did I get written off?
Yeah, you weren't doing a lot. And you'd have had to move to Melbourne and we'd have had to be separated. You couldn't go back and forth.
But you couldn't come with me to Melbourne?
Well, I was touring and I had a record coming out. I had to be in Sydney.
I think now it's sort of a different time. I mean, it's also like when you have a kid in school, it just relocating sometimes works and sometimes doesn't.
What do you think about now as an actor who's been through so many types of jobs in so many decades, like, would you want a sort of like boring working actor job on a network show? Like, is that desirable or is it like,
it's all about the writing and the people making it. If it was, you know,
but for those kind of shows, it's not, it's really about the steadiness of the paycheck. I think
it depends on the level. I mean, there's a lot of long-winded shows that are amazing.
Yeah. So you would do it. You're open to it.
Yes. I would do it if it was of a level of, you know, that I like.
You deserve.
Well, that's the quality.
Treat yourself.
Treat myself with the quality.
Yeah.
Of course.
Absolutely. I feel kind of like, I know it's very case by case. Like I look at a lot of artists now, obviously we've talked about this ad nauseum about how sellout culture was so big when we were coming up and some of the ways that artists our age have trouble adapting now is by still holding on to values that they're irrelevant.
Listen,
now.
If I got to be Ray Donovan.
Well, that's not even, there's no compromise in that. You want to be Ray Donovan.
I know. Well, that's what you're saying, but that's a long commitment of a show.
Yeah, but you're talking about a very
30 Rock or whatever.
I think you're using, by talking about really good quality, you're talking about the absolute cream of the crop. That's not your average working actor's
so
experience.
You're saying, would you do a medium?
I'm saying, would you take West Wing, a long time? Even that, top of the line.
I would do, but I'm you're saying about, not top of the line.
No, I'm just saying a working actor job. Would you want a job that you worked 4 days a week?
It depends on...
On a show you didn't really care about, but
quality,
it was a good paycheck.
The quality is not cream of the crop.
It's fine. It's fine. Like a network show, you know.
I guess it depends where it is. Like what if I was playing an American in Paris and I felt like living in Rome or Paris or something.
So it's circumstantial to you.
Sure. Yeah. And it was like, you know, a mid-level show in Europe, but I got paid enough to live a nice life and we all felt like moving. Yeah.
Because I think people perceive you as being very picky, which you kind of are. Like, that's what's interesting about
it. But look at my IMDb. Not so picky.
But you've each thing you've picked for very specific purposes.
Lifetime and, but those, you got to do some Lifetime shows. And what's the other one? I've done both.
Hallmark?
I've done both.
Yeah. Well, the Santa incident. I mean, to anybody that wants a great Christmas movie about a vet, because I know you've done some, you've done some other vet movies, not for Christmas, but in the Santa incident, you get to do the vet and the Christmas movie. And that is, that's double banger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Double Darshan.
Where, remember those cute little kids in Ireland?
Oh my God.
They were playing your children.
I know. They were like, I had little kids playing my kid, little Irish kids playing, you know, but I wasn't Irish. Oh, no, they did American accents.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, but why was I American? I'm like, they played Americans. Anyway, Goldie was a little baby and the little girl was like, Goldie was one. She was like, why is she always so dirty?
Why does she always have dirty clothers?
I'm like, she's one, vomiting on herself still.
Yeah, exactly. That was good. That was a fun adventure. I like
Dublin.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I like that our life has taken us through these moments of having to relocate and reorient ourselves. Like, we've been talking a lot about this time being here in Sydney, about how much of our identities get formed around our house and where we are and our communities, and how it's such an amazing opportunity to open up to new things about yourself. Like, you're going to become a jogger, you were saying yesterday.
I know. Well, there's a lot of joggers in Sydney because it's a, you know, it's sort of a, I guess people think LA is like that too. And you know where it's
fitness-centric, outdoors.
You know what's supposed to be fitnessy is, I feel like Colorado is one of the most fitness states. Mm. Places that are pleasant outdoors, I suppose. So I see these joggers and I'm like, what if I had a dream I was jogging? Because I've been conflicted with, like, I get so stuck with being in LA and, or being identified as like someone who would live in London or New York or LA. Mm. And so getting out of that has been, so I feel like the dream was telling me I can be a whole new person.
Totally.
And maybe a jogger.
The jogging side of you, there is something for you, like I identify one of the moments I fell in love with you as when we were sitting in a Kundalini yoga class and you were going, rotating side to side, going, and you were doing it really fast and it had a jogging motion to it. And something about you, maybe because you're such a mellow person, when you really exert yourself physically, it's hot. It's very attractive.
Well, I think it's my inner, you know, child. I know this has sounded like a new age episode and you know how much I'm cringy about that, but as a kid, like when I was on the soccer team, I was the goalie and I was so bummed because I just wanted to run.
That is a hard job though.
It's hard, but you don't get to run.
But were you scared of the ball?
Yeah, a little bit. But the point of my story is I wanted to run because when you're young, you love running. And like, remember playing and just like I would see a field and you're just like the instinct of the young, you know, at least I had that. So I think there's a part of me that still wants to be vigorous.
So let's get back to your soccer experience. Did you sort of try out to be the goalie or did you get put in the goalie
position?
I got
put in, not because I wasn't a good jogger, but they thought I'd be good at it.
So what was it about
you? Or maybe I wasn't good at soccer and they thought I'd be...
But goalie's very... You had to dive. Did you dive for the ball?
Yeah. And
that's hard.
And I had a sort of funny, like Real Housewives of Los Angeles, Real Children of Los Angeles moment where the goalie wears brown, or at least in this, and all the other kids wore the uniform colors, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever the team was, green, let's say. And on the day of the picture, there was this little girl who had joined late in the season, and she was like a real like cutie pie winner type, I don't know, performance-y type kid.
Wait, hang on one second. Gold's really close. That's right, babe. Her playing soccer as a child. Goalie. She said goalie about soccer.
Oh my gosh. Anyway. So she was goalie for some reason one game and I was got to run around. And then it was the day of the pictures and she had the brown uniform, but I was goalie the whole year. And the only good thing I was thinking is in the picture, I'll wear brown and you get to stand in the center of the team. And you know that pose where you're on one knee?
Oh, yes.
One knee's on the grass and one knee's up and you're standing like this.
And that's you
with
in the middle.
Ball. Yeah. Oh. And she, because she, and I said, well, I think we should change because I'm the goalie. And
right.
She's like, well, I was the goalie today. And I was like, no, I'm the goalie for the whole season. You just happen to be it today. And she not only is in the picture, but she's like really front and center. And I'm next to her and her knee is even like coming in front of my body. And I'm like holding, you know, you hold the soccer ball and you put your hand.
But you did get to hold the ball.
We all, I think... I think she holds the ball.
She held the ball and she's got her knee up and her knee is sort of edging you out of the picture.
And you get the placard. You know what I mean? Do you ever get those?
Yeah.
It's on that bad cheap wood. I had it somewhere. I wish I still had it. But
what pose are you in?
I don't know, but I'm smiling like just to represent.
On the outside.
But not on the inside. And it was such an intense season because it was a man and a woman, a married couple who were coaching together.
Mm.
And toward the end of the season, it got tense. Mm. And then it turned out they were separating. And then we were all like, well, which one's going to coach us? We were caught in this because they were like such figures for us. It was very emotional.
That's crazy. Do you think, so they were like working out some of their marriage issues on the field.
Maybe they were like, this will save our, like, let's coach together. Yeah. Might save
they do
our marriage.
Say couples that coach together. Yeah. That's a classic way of saving the coaching soccer team to save the marriage.
But it didn't work.
Well, it's very, this is all in a pre Ted Lasso world too. Like Americans' infatuation with soccer was in a very infant state.
Yeah, I mean, that soccer league called the ACLU or what was it called?
No. What's the that? ACLU is the American Civil Liberties Union. They like protect people's rights.
Oh, no, we weren't
sue
doing
the
that.
Government and
no,
stuff.
But you've seen this team. It's a very LA thing. I think it must have started in the 50s or 60s, but in the 80s it was major and it's still happening. But it was like, you know how sports go in and out of like...
Sure.
Gymnastics in the 80s, every school was like, not every school, but had gymnastics.
Yeah, huge,
and
huge.
What was big here is always...
Square dancing was massive in the 80s in Australian PE classes. It's an amazing thing because there surely was an education board that someone came in with the idea. They were like, what are we going to make compulsory? They were like... How about square dancing?
Were there films that were influencing people or what was influencing people? Because sometimes a film like Jurassic Park got a lot of money behind.
And people into paleontology, kids, right?
Yes. And they put money behind it and found all those new dinosaurs in China.
Right. So are you insinuating there is some kind of, there was like
cowboy?
A big square dance conspiracy to get it into schools?
Or no, I'm saying that there was a big album or there was a big something. You often gets, you know, country or the world.
Well, I've mentioned this before, but like Guns N' Roses and Skid Row and 80s rock, there was a lot of cowboy imagery.
Yeah.
And the movie, do you remember Young Guns?
Right.
Like Young Guns, like cowboys were in the zeitgeist.
And your bat mitzvah was themed.
My bar mitzvah, yeah.
Bar mitzvah.
Yeah, it was cowboy themed.
And
yeah,
your parents wore the, did they get the outfits?
No, my mom went traditional.
But didn't they get square dancing outfits outside of your birthday, bar mitzvah theme?
Did my parents wear square dancing outfits when?
Like, didn't they do square dancing?
I think they had done some.
Oh, okay.
Done some square dancing. It wasn't like a regular thing, but it was kind of there was a certain, it was a beloved sport, sure, within our community. Look, the Jewish square dance community of 1980s Australia really has a lot to answer for.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah.
So
there you go. So how are you settling in? Do you feel like do you feel like an Australian?
I do. I mean, I do. It's like nice. We've done this before, so I know the rigmarole.
Yeah. We had a really nice dinner last night with
my
old friends, Dan Zilba and Esti Zilba. Fun and they're kids. Hilarious kids. And I was saying it's really fun because they're like childhood friends and school friends of mine that went into the music business.
Yeah.
And it's fun to have that dual perspective. I'm thinking so much about, I guess because we're here and I'm Australian and I'm a musician and I'm looking at all my friends with their careers and I'm just thinking a lot about my identity as an Australian musician, an Australian creative. And it's very like, it's provocative for me. It's complicated for me. I think because Australia is a small country and it's a small market. And in some ways, some places that are small, it encourages people to just like not give a fuck and just be themselves. And other places that are small, it encourages a bit of conservatism in the way of thinking. So I always like pushed back against that because there was like a way you do things. And I still feel like that. I still feel like a lot of Aussie music and Aussie film is very caught in rules and expectations about the way things are done.
What do you think about the big Australian stars like Olivia and...
Olivia Newton-John.
Michael Hutchins.
I mean, I love them. I mean, they're very... The ones that broke through at that level...
How did they feel flamboyant. About... How did
well, they... In Excess really worked their way up through the circuit that was the pub rock circuit. And Olivia Newton-John, I don't know about her actual...
And the Bee Gees.
...career trajectory.
But did they... Yeah. How did they feel about Australia? I feel like Michael Hutchins lived in England, right?
Well, and or back here. I mean, I think most Australian creatives feel... similarly conflicted where they just love the country so much because it really is like if you have to be from anywhere that's your home base. I mean, Australia is just amazing, but there are challenges with being an Australian artist. Like we were chatting last night about the Aussie artists that go over to South by Southwest and how because there's a little bit of a protected system here, some of them are not used to competing at an international level. And it's a bit of a shock to the system, how hungry people in other countries, bigger countries are for their place, you know, for their seat at the table.
Yeah.
Like in countries like this where there's, even though it's hard to get, there is support from the government for creative projects and you can get grants and you can get that, you know, it's a very...
Oh, right.
It's a balancing thing of like, in some ways it's good and in some ways it sort of like creates a false sense of sometimes entitlement on the part of creative people.
Kate saying about the punk scene are really technically good because they sort of don't have any hope of...
Yeah. Well, the punk bands that Kate, my stepdaughter, that Kate hangs out with and is involved in that scene... They are very outside the system. So they're not going to Sounds Australia for funding or expectations of
going.
But did
Amyl and the Sniffers?
Yeah, but that's in a way I think why Amyl and the Sniffers got pushback because they...
Oh, right.
They had commercial aspirations.
Yeah.
They do work within the system. And I think they're an amazing band and it's worked really great. But within the punk community, I think it was a bit blasphemous
it's
that
still
they...
still like that where... There's, I wonder, was it like in the LA or the Detroit or whatever punk scene did people, I mean, when they started doing really well.
Well, look at Green Day. I mean, I think Green Day are probably the closest kind of comparison you can have to Amyl, where they did come out of an underground scene. Like the Gilman Street scene in Berkeley was a punk scene. It was like all ages shows and squat houses and all that stuff. But Green Day had much bigger aspirations. And it's like, it is pretty... I think you do, if you come up through a scene like that, you do kind of walk around in your success feeling like you've got a bit of an arrow, a target on your back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know Flea felt conflicted.
Yeah. Chili Peppers were similar.
But I think after decades and decades, you probably relax.
I think there is a level in your bank account that makes like, you feel comfortable with the sacrifice of losing a few friends.
Gives back.
Yeah, he does. He's very charitable. But being in LA, I think, is different in that even the punk bands in LA, it's so embedded. The idea of show business is so embedded in LA.
And what about New York? There's a fabulousness about Stooges were Detroit. I mean,
the Ramones, Lou Reed. Yeah, I do think there's a, if you're in LA or New York,
you're just like
you do
fabulous.
Grow up with an expectation of wanting
there's power, like, success a little bit.
It's yeah, and attention, and exactly.
And New York has got those crystals in the dirt, and that's what makes it.
Is that true?
That's what my brother said, that the soil under Manhattan has got a lot of crystals in it, and that's what made it vibrant in a place for people to go.
I'd believe it. I don't know about if it's crystals, but I do think, like, in Australia, the feeling of having your feet on the ground here is a different feeling than having your feet on the ground somewhere else.
I know. I was about to do a sleep program that my friend told me about where you never sit in bed unless you're sleeping or stooping, and you only, you turn off the whole devices thing. And if you are restless, you get up, get out of bed, sit in a chair, go in the living room, whole program to sleep through the night. And I just had to come to Australia.
Yeah, get some sleep. You're sleeping well, right? Yeah. You wake up.
I still wake up in the night.
But you're chill.
I'm not anxious.
I know. Sometimes I turn over and you're awake in the night listening to a podcast or something, and you go, hi.
Oh,
and you just
God.
Have like a smile on your
it's
face.
It's everything I kept saying to you, I just expect an appropriate amount of anxiety, the appropriate amount of grief, anger, all of this. I don't want the neurotic, where I'm like, for no reason, just traumatically having anxiety attacks or whatever. And I don't know if I just hoped it into existence or what, but knock on wood, it's not perfect. Like, I'm not expecting, to sleep like a teenager again. But I mean, it's kind of amazing.
Can we have a conversation on pod? Because often we finish and you say, oh, can we put a song at the end? And it's always too late. I finished editing.
We're doing it.
Well, let's talk it through now on the pod. What song, if you could have a song that sums up this moment in your life?
This makes me so mad because I always think of the song after, but now I'm being put on the...
Let's talk it through.
But why are you making me pick it on camera?
Because then there'll be accountability where I'm going to be editing and I'll be like, I have to put the song because I said I'm going to do it on the podcast.
You're going to put a song, and if I don't think of it at this second, you're still putting a song on.
Yeah, but if you come and tell it to me after I've finished editing, it's too late. So that's why I'm saying this is a chance for us to talk it through and think of a song you might like to hear.
I'm having that thing where you're like, what's the vice president's name? And you're like,
okay.
So I stumped you're putting
you choked.
A song.
You choked. Yeah.
You're choking me. You're making me choke. I'll tell you right after, okay?
Okay.
It's a surprise, beautiful babies.
Okay, that sounds good.
Thank you. I won that one.
How was your first...
I didn't win the cupcake wars, but I won
that
one.
We're trying to make I've got a single coming out, and we were trying to make a video today, and just a lyric video.
I'm like, you should get the bigger cupcakes because we're writing words on them. No, small's fine, small's fine. And we brought them home.
But did you, just so I understand, did you mean let's do all big?
I just said big, you'll be able to write the words on.
Right, but I thought you meant mixing them in. I thought you meant for the
I
bigger words.
I just meant
words,
for the writing, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, anyway.
It's fine.
This is going to... We're now discussing a video concept that is not going to get made, but the cool thing was you, me, and Goldie were problem solving this.
Yeah.
And we came up with another whole idea that we're going to go shoot right after this.
Yeah.
After
and
podcast.
In order not to waste the cupcakes, I think we should bring them over to the fairy children that we made friends with.
Yeah. I think we should eat them.
I don't want that much.
I wanted to ask you though, how was your, because you had my first gig down at Dashville of this current little time, and you had your first night in our new house by yourself.
Yeah.
There's which is going to be sort of part of
it
your experience.
It was a little dramatic because Goldie had that funny night.
She had a weird night sweat.
Some physical thing where I was like, I don't know the number of a paramedic if I need one.
Right.
And she told me it's 000.
Oh, so she knew.
Yeah. But she didn't tell. Yeah.
She probably knew from watching Bondi Rescue.
Oh, yeah. And also, if you dial 911 anywhere, it'll connect you.
Is that true?
That's what she said.
That does make sense because you think of all the movies, kids must grow up all over the world thinking that they dial 911.
Right. 911's a joke in your town.
Yeah.
You know that song?
I do know. It's Public Enemy.
Yeah. Maybe that's the song we put on.
Let's do it. Can we please? Can we? Yeah. I like settling on that. Okay. Beautiful babies. Thank you for listening to Weird and Together.
Got there.
I'm Ben Lee.
I'm Ione Sky.
And this is Public Enemy with 911 is a joke. I want to say one more thing. If you want to watch the full video of this episode and as well as get a lot of exclusive content, which you're going to do some amazing content this week.
It's all starting.
Consider joining our Substack for $5 a month. Link in the show notes. And we love you, beautiful babies. 911 is a joke in your town. Situation. So get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo. Town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up and get down.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.